This episode of Playback is rebroadcast from August 2008.
When you've had a day, your eyes are red, you're half asleep, your brain is dead.
You're half asleep, your brain is dead? Sounds like it's time for an audio intervention. I'm Carrie Thompson, and when I feel half asleep and brain dead, I listen to NPR stories from exactly 25 years ago, like this one that teaches kids to rap their way to a higher GPA.
It teaches them words they should know and understand. We spell them with rhythm. We define them in rhythm.
It's the August 1983 episode of Playback, and DJ Doug Jocko Henderson is going to teach us how to rap and rhyme. And poet Andre Codrescu is going to talk about taking a vacation.
The idea of a vacation, if I understand it correctly, is to do none of the things you do at home. Paradise, after you live in it for a while, is as boring as oatmeal.
We'll hear how Codrescu avoids long lines at the airport by taking vacations of the mind. And we'll have some existential musings from a woman who went out on a limb, actress Shirley MacLaine.
The soul leaves the body and resides in heaven, as it were, or on the astral planes, until it decides to reincarnate to further experience life.
We'll have the full itinerary of Shirley MacLaine's well-traveled soul and the story of how she got her first big break. It's the extra existential August 83 edition of Playback. And first things first.
Ain't much I can say about the heat. It just makes me tired, miserable, and everything.
Your clothes are sticking to you. You just don't feel good. Your body feels just totally worn out.
It's hot enough for the devil to ask for ice water.
I get evil. I get mean, and I get nasty.
The guy behind you melted his sunglasses.
Hot town, summer in the city.
So, what to do?
When I get hot, I feel like go in and get me a good beer.
I wait for a good breeze to come by and open my shirt and say,
I was sitting in the shade, a beautiful breeze, but once you go in that hot sun, it burns you.
I wish it would rain big time, you know, 4 inches today.
It's so obvious that we're all wishing for a change in the weather, and we have a right to expect a change by now, don't you think so?
We're having a heat wave.
Well, the weather did change. Hurricane Alicia roared through Galveston, Texas in the middle of August 83. NPR's Steve McVicker spent a night in the Galveston Civil Defense Shelter as Alicia bore down on the island. He described the scene to Bob Edwards.
Steve, I have had the good fortune not to have ever experienced a hurricane. What's it like?
Well, it's more than I bargained for. You just really can't imagine what it feels like to be outside in the rain with the wind blowing 115 miles per hour, tree limbs breaking off, you know, signs coming up. It's really a frightening experience.
Well, you have an excuse. You're covering the story. Why is everybody else hanging around?
I think it has something to do with the spirit of people living here on the island. They have made it through other hurricanes, even though many of them didn't make it through some of the more severe hurricanes like Carla. There's just this island instinct, this island attitude that almost like going down with the ship, that people want to stay here as long as they can.
Steve McVicker reporting from Galveston, Texas. And speaking of waiting things out, consider the long, drawn-out legislative process behind the Martin Luther King holiday. The campaign to create a federal holiday for King started shortly after his assassination in 1968. The first bill came to a vote in the U.S. House of Representatives in 1979, but fell 5 votes short. Then, in August 83, the House took it up again.
The House voted today to designate the birthday of Martin Luther King Jr. a national holiday. The vote was 338-90. The day would be observed on the third Monday of January and would be the nation's 10th legal holiday. If signed into law this year, it would take effect in 1986. But it's opposed by the Reagan administration, which argues the government ought not to be shut down for another day when the federal purse strings need further tightening. The holiday must also pass the Senate.
The Senate passed its version of the MLK holiday bill in September 83. And once Reagan realized he wouldn't be able to veto it, he signed it into law in November of 83. Several states chose to opt out of the holiday at first, or they gave it a different name like Civil Rights Day or Human Rights Day. The holiday was not observed by all 50 states until the year 2000. August 28th, 1983, marked the 20th anniversary of the March on Washington, when 250,000 people gathered in D.C. for the largest civil rights demonstration in American history.
You notice there is no noise. This is a very, very orderly procession, straggling, confused. One of the most interesting things about it is that the people are doing the marching. There are very few people actually watching. There are a lot of police.
It was 20 years ago that Martin Luther King Jr. stood before the likeness of Lincoln and intoned the now immortal words, "I have a dream."
It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal.
That speech and that day was the watershed moment in a movement for freedom for black Americans. In the decade of the 60s. It's hard to, 20 years later, believe it, but when we marched, it was the law of the land in 11 southern states that if you were black, you had to drink water from separate fountains. You couldn't sit anywhere on a bus that you wished. You had to sit in the back. You couldn't eat in restaurants with dignity. You had to take a greasy bag lunch or go outside to eat. You couldn't go into restrooms by law in this democracy.
That was Washington, D.C. delegate Walter Fauntroy, the coordinator for both the historic 1963 march and the 20th anniversary march held in August of 83. So what was the impact of 20 years of the civil rights movement? NPR reporters took to the streets in Washington and Chicago to find out.
I think there's a new kind of a distance between blacks and whites, and obviously the poverty level is still a serious and dangerous problems. On the other hand, real progress has been made in the last 20 years, just no doubt about that.
I think pretty much the same problems, the same discrimination, the same racism and institutionalized racism that are part of this country today existed then, and I don't see that they've changed very much.
Well, I think the word in the beginning was, we will overcome. I think that they can say now we have overcome, or we are overcoming.
I don't think much has changed at all. It's just gotten a little bit subtler.
Well, I still feel that the ideals we're trying to get across are still out there.
This march will show this country that black people are still united.
The only thing I know, I'm just going down there just for civil rights, and I'm just going to keep on marching until it comes to pass.
Voices from the streets of Chicago and D.C. on the eve of the 20th anniversary of the March on Washington.
If you want to get into something, you pick the right time. Come on and follow me. Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you want to get into something, you chose the right time. Come on and follow me. Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you're disappointed with the way things are,
so, it's 1983, you're young, you're single, and depending on where you live, you might be outnumbered. NPR's Robert Krulwich decided it was time to break out some gender demographics.
According to the 1980 census, women and men are not spread evenly across the United States. There are regions where there is an abundance of men and other places where there's an overload of women. And tonight, in case you're planning a move, we are going to tell you where the boys are and where the girls are in this country. And since statistics are a little hard to do on the radio, we're going to do this musically. Now remember, please, that with a few exceptions, there are generally more women than men in America. But for men looking for women, there are some states where, relatively speaking, men are now rare.
For every being of the male sex, fish or fowl or Tyrannosaurus Rex, for every being there should be a mate. but that's not so in every state.
All right, here are those places. States with elderly populations have more women. Since they women live longer, there are more of them around. Florida has 88 and a half men for every 100 women. Northeastern states with lots of clerical, finance, retail, insurance, banking, and healthcare jobs. Those jobs attract women, so the Northeast, it turns out, pulls women out of the South and Midwest. Therefore, for every 100 women, New Jersey has only 88 men. Pennsylvania, only 88 men. Rhode Island, only 86 men. New York State, only 85 men. And on the top of the list, the place in America where men statistically are most rare, the nation's capital, the District of Columbia, 82 men for every 100 women. The reason is that D.C. has a large black population, and according to the Census Bureau, the black and white races in America seem to have slightly different ratio of boys and girls. Whites produce 106 boys for every 100 girls, blacks 103 boys for every 100 girls. So the blacks start out with fewer boys, plus black males die earlier than whites, which creates a preponderance of women in black communities like D.C. So that where is where the women are. Now, how about the men?
For every bee of the female sex, fish or fowl or Tyrannosaurus Rex, for every being there should be a mate. But that's not so in every state.
Where the boys are, where there's more called he than there are called she. Where the boys are, that's the place that we're longing to be.
Well, there are not many such places. Only four states have more men in them than women. For every 100 women, Nevada has 101 men, Wyoming 104 men, Hawaii 105 men, and at the very top of the list, with far more men than women, is the state of Alaska, 115.9 men for every 100 women. If that sounds heavy, during the gold rush 80 years ago in Alaska, according to the Wall Street Journal, for every 100 women, there were 259 men. The explanation is just the reverse of the Northeast. The Northeast has jobs that attract women from other regions. The Western states have jobs in mining, agriculture, heavy industrial outdoor work, which attracts men from all over. So as a general rule of thumb, the West has the highest concentration of men, the South and the East, the highest concentration of women. So now you know.
Where the boys are, that's the place that we're longing to be. Where the boys are, where there's more called she than there are called she. Where the boys are, that's the place that we're longing to be.
I'm Robert Krulwich, reporting from New York.
Now, I warn you, that song is going to cycle endlessly through your head, as is the theme song to this next demented segment.
Sensitive Male Hotline.
The name is Dano. I'll answer your questions about men, women, and life.
Dear Dano, do women really have the same kind of minds men do? Are their brains made of some kind of highly emotional substance that turns to jelly when things get heavy? I know this lady who cries when she's happy or sad. Sometimes she cries for no reason at all. What gives?
A woman is more in touch with her emotions than a man is. That's because men are afraid to open the door that connects the brain with the heart. Men prefer to keep this door locked, and in doing so, they create an imaginary scary monster who is waiting behind that locked door. That's why men drink more than women, because they don't want to think about that monster. But one day we're all going to have to open that door and face what's on the other side. 9 out of 10 times the answer will be nothing's on the other side. It's just an empty hallway with linoleum tile on the floor and acoustic tile on the ceiling. At least that's been my experience.
That's my angle on it. Sensitive Male Hotline. Listening to your feelings. The feelings of sensitive guys.
Advice for sensitive guys and girls who live vicariously. From the Duck's Breath Mystery Theater Company of San Francisco. Now, I'm not sure if the guy that came up with this next idea was sensitive or not, but he sure had rhythm.
The words together as wind or sunshine, rain or weather. And interjection shows surprise as, oh, how pretty, oh, how wise.
A
new way to learn grammar and math and science through rap music, the idea of former Philadelphia disc jockey Jocko Henderson. In 1980, Henderson had a hit record, Rhythm Talk, and now he's turned his talents to helping young people through educational tapes, an idea that came to him when he was asked to address a group of students.
During that time, of course, the record I had, Rhythm Talk, was really being played. So when he introduced me, of course, the kid said, Jocko, do your record. Do your record. I didn't have the record there. I wasn't prepared to do it. But we just started snapping our fingers. You got to rock a with the Jocko like a boat on the dock. A pop a dock and do the boogaloo too. And it goes on for 7 minutes. And verbatim, the students were saying it with me.
Wow.
And while I was doing this, the electric light hit. I said, suppose I was rapping education, would they know it? So I went to the different department heads here in the Philadelphia school system, and I got all the facts together. And, of course, we put them in rhyme. We used the same musicians as the Philadelphia International musicians. We gave them a reflections tape, which is a historical tape. And it was about the Declaration of Independence. On a Monday, we said, we'll be back next Monday to see if you know it.
It was a four-minute history lesson, then.
Yes, yeah. That's exactly what it was. Anyway, the following Monday when we came back, these kids knew every word like that. Hmm. So all we did, really, is took rock music to another dimension, into education.
How do you teach mathematics that way?
The math, we're going to take it from kindergarten through calculus. You know, it's a one and then the one is a, you know, just with the rhythm. Mm. We all remember Humpty Dumpty sat on the wall. Why do we remember that? Because it had some type of rhythm. Twinkle, twinkle, little star. We never forget them. And, of course, that's what we pray will happen here. Because even the kids who did the historical thing 3 years ago, we tested them, well, in different classes, but we tested half of them. They still remember it.
Now, tell me what tapes are available now, what you already have developed.
All right. What we have developed now is the 8 parts of speech, which is a language arts. We have the career education program, which teaches them everything about how to get a job. In fact, they used it in the Philadelphia Summer Youth Program last summer, 7,500 of them. It teaches them words they should know and understand. We spell them with rhythm. We define them in rhythm. How to fill out a job application, how to write a resume, how to interview for a job, how to stay employed. Everything they need to know about getting a job.
It sounds like a real happy way to start a school classroom hour.
Oh, yes, there's no question about it. And once you just take the tape into a classroom and turn it on, it's just the kids just light up.
Yeah.
Light up like a Christmas tree. And I'm happy to say that some of the worst kids, the non-readers, those who hang on the corners, this is their time to stop.
When you've had a day, your eyes are red, you're half asleep, your brain is dead. Some students light up before they go to the class. They nod, learn nothing, no winking they pass. Education that they need has passed them by.
That was DJ Doug Jocko Henderson and NPR's Noah Adams, inspiring students to rap their way to academic success. I'm Carrie Thompson, and you're listening to Playback. So, now that your brain is completely scrambled, here's another helping of strange, actress Shirley MacLaine. She made a name for herself in the 50s and 60s as an award-winning film and stage actress. And then came Chakras, Reincarnation, Astral Planes, and, in 1983, her book, Out on a Limb. She talked about her spiritual awakening with NPR's Jay Kernis.
Have you ever known you had a very good sleep, but you wake up exhausted? Well, I began to try to define what that was all about. After going into the phenomenon, so to speak, of learning from spiritual guides, knowing that these soul beings were, quote, on the other side, unquote. I mean, that is, in my opinion, what happens when death, so-called, occurs. The soul leaves the body and resides in heaven, as it were, or on the astral planes, until it decides to reincarnate to further experience life. Therefore, it began to occur to me, when I was sleeping, it felt as though my soul was also leaving the body in another kind of out-of-body experience to be educated on the astral planes during the night. And that was why I was waking up so tired. It was as though I never got a rest. I was in school all night long.
Had you ever dreamed that you were on stage, that you were in a rehearsal?
I've often dreamt that I've gone out on a stage and not known what I'm supposed to do. No one told me where the rehearsal was. No one told me what the choreography was. I didn't even know what the number was.
What do you do? How do you resolve?
It's interesting. I make it up. I make it up, and at the moment that I'm challenged to do something because I'm out there on the stage, I respond to the moment, and it comes out pretty good.
Where am I going, and what will I find?
McLean was understudying lead actress Carol Haney in the 1954 hit musical The Pajama Game, when she got her big break.
Well, I would have to assume that Carol chose to break her ankle and to have that accident. And I would have to, if I believe all of this, because after all, there's no board of directors that tells us what our incarnations are going to be. We choose it. I would have to say she chose it, so therefore I thank her for giving me the chance.
Actress Shirley MacLaine. You can view the full line of MacLaine's Chakra Sky jewelry on her website and take a look at her other products. I particularly like the title of the book she released about her dog. It's called Out on a Leash. Commentator Andre Codrescu went out on something of a limb with this next confession.
I am going to tell you something terrible. I have never taken a vacation. True, I have lived in places where other people take their vacations too, but it isn't the same. The idea of a vacation, if I understand it correctly, is to do none of the things you do at home. What avails the man the beauty of oceans if he has to do his laundry in them? Paradise, after you live in it for a while, is as boring as oatmeal. The natives of paradise often go crazy and do odd things that amuse the tourists, but no one is a character to himself, whether he lives in heaven or not. What tourist to San Francisco has not found the Golden Gate Bridge immensely more mysterious for the knowledge that unhappy souls jump from it every day? I know one of the few survivors of a leap from that bridge. He told me that he felt terribly uncomfortable knowing that he would turn up in 100 home movies in the Midwest as he took his leap. This, he told me, is perhaps why he survived. Stories like that have caused me to take vacations of the mind instead. I'll explain. A few years ago, a friend of mine who lived on the east side of New York, I lived in the west side of New York, complained about never getting any mail. That very same evening, I wrote him a letter. It was dated July 10, 1981, Rome. Dear Michael, it began, today I jumped into Fontana Trevi and gathered a pocket full of change. Next day, I received this from Pamplona, Spain. Dear Andre, today they let the bull loose on the streets and I barely escaped with my life. Over the next 10 months, we treated each other with our wild adventures in Madagascar, Machu Picchu, Mauritius, Kathmandu, Venice, Rio de Janeiro, Port-au-Prince, Lake Balaton, Odessa, Bahia, Kenya, Madras, Patscuaro, and places we made up like Mountain of the Frozen Gold Buddha, Nymph Lake, Heart of the Palm, Mare Nostrum on the moon, and Mare Tranquillitas also on the moon. Our biographers will be amazed at our travels 100 years hence. Take my word for it, the greatest voyages are made in the mind.
The staycation is born, thanks to commentator Andre Codrescu. On August 17, 1983, lyricist Ira Gershwin passed away. Together with his famous brother George, they wrote words and music for some of the most memorable songs of our time. Here's a tribute to Ira Gershwin from fellow songwriter Sammy Kahn.
Ira Gershwin was blessed by great music and understood great music. He loved words, played with words.
You say either, and I say either. You say neither, and I say neither. Either, either, neither, neither. Let's call the whole thing off.
And a lyricist is a man who writes words that sing to the notes. They have to sing to the notes. And Ira Gershwin's words sang to anyone's notes. His lyric, it's part of the language. Embrace me, my sweet embraceable you. Embrace me, my irreplaceable you.
Just one look at you, my heart grew tipsy in me. You and you alone bring out the gypsy in me.
He's just gone away, but he's with us forever. As long as there's words and music, there will be Ira and George Gershwin. As long as there's words and music. Because it's timeless. That's the word, timeless.
Above all, I want my arms about you.
Timeless. That's what we call these quirky, lovable stories from the NPR archives. Production help for Playback comes from Sir Michael Katziff, Robert Speer, and the totally rockin' NPR Broadcast Library. Next month, we will personally reanimate several NPR stories that haven't seen the light of day since 1983, including a revealing interview about language with playwright David Mamet. I'm Carrie Thompson, and you're listening to Playback.